This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. A social media phenomenon has erupted since the Trump inauguration, rogue Twitter accounts. These accounts purport to be real in the sense that former or even current government employees who no longer feel comfortable or who are now prohibited from using official accounts are now using rogue accounts to tweet information. The Twitter accounts mirror the U.S. national parks, NASA, there's the actual EPA fax account, even rogue POTUS staff account. Many of the tweets are about climate change, the sale of federal lands, and maybe inside information from the West Wing of the White House. In the studio to talk about the surge in these accounts and to help sort out what may be legit and what may be actually fake is Nate Carpenter. He runs the Social Media Analytics Command Center at Illinois State University. The SMAC Lab is tracking 44 rogue accounts. Nate, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Some people are obviously jumping on the bandwagon here. These look like fake accounts with not real information. Maybe they're joke accounts. Some of these feel and read real to me, though. What do you make of all of this?
Well, what we've noticed is that the earliest ones tend to be those that are the most legitimate, those that are coming out really right during the inauguration, or those that are coming out directly after Donald Trump had lambasted the National Park Service for retweeting some images of Obama's and Trump's inaugurations for comparative purposes. We also see a bunch of them erupt very quickly after the statements made by Kellyanne Conway about alternative facts. And in fact, that's where many of them got their initial names. That use of alt in their names refers to the alternative in that same sense. And so the earlier they are to that moment, the more likely they are to be those, I guess, legitimate accounts in terms of being made by the federal employees in response to these moments.
But maybe we shouldn't rule out later accounts, because it could be that some people are just getting fed up. It just takes them longer to hit that breaking point, and they may be starting accounts later. Is there any way, do you think, to sort of apply a metric to this, or to look at it with a certain set of eyes to say, yeah, that one's maybe real, this one's maybe fake?
Well, a couple of ways that we look at that include what kinds of content are they posting? So if we look at the original spirit of many of these alt accounts, it was to produce scientific information, that which was under a gag order, especially scientific research that was being prevented from being shared to the public. And so when we look at the accounts that tended to produce that kind of content, and again, these tended to be fairly nonpartisan, posts about climate change, and slowly they've evolved more.
Wait,
now.
You just said climate change is nonpartisan? I'll note that here. Okay.
Sure. Yep. Well, at least in terms of how they've been approaching science.
Sure.
Yep, exactly.
I was making a bad joke. This all started when the Badlands National Park in South Dakota sent out some climate change tweets in defiance of the Trump administration. And then those tweets were later deleted. A little while later, we saw Bad Hombre Lands NPS sort of take over. Since many of us keep informed, send, get news on Twitter, how should we weigh this account and some of the other accounts as news sources?
Certainly. So first, we have to really pay attention again to the message. What is it designed to do? In many cases, accounts like this are designed to inform. And again, that is the initial idea behind many of these, to continue that flow, that stream of science. The next layer that we'll see happen is that they want to invoke outrage. And so they will post things that are would otherwise be really disturbing to those who know these areas. And as soon as those kinds of posts start to happen, that's the sense that I start to say there may be some distortion put into place, that there may be, again, a particular, I don't want to say spin on it, but there may be facts that are omitted, or, again, a call to action about something that may not be as significant as otherwise indicated.
On the flip side, if so-called official accounts are being gagged, how reliable are those?
Right. And in terms of reliability, again, in terms of being gagged, we're looking at accounts that may not be able to post what they normally would post, and then are now focused on other campaigns, things that would otherwise be less contentious. So let's say if we look at a health campaign, for example, the CDC might now focus on air quality safety, or it may focus now on having a fire detector in your home. So things that are on a much lower scale of, scientific research.
More innocuous.
Right.
SMAC has been tracking dozens of these accounts. What are you learning by looking at some of these different accounts?
Sure. So we've noticed changes in the messaging. And I think one of the things I mentioned early on was the shift from more, again, science-focused posting now to more, I would say, just general resistance-based posting. And that is a shift that we really saw in after about the first 3 or 4 days of their existence. They made that big shift. And when I say resistance, I say things like posts about being against the wall with Mexico, posts against the immigration ban, posts really showing outcry against many of the Trump nominees that are currently now going before the Senate for either confirmation or for votes.
Have you ever seen this kind of viral effect on Twitter before? Some of these accounts now have hundreds and thousands of followers gained in a very short amount of time.
In terms of our lab, I don't think we've seen anything like that. But we do see viral phenomena creep up in very unexpected ways.
But usually that's about a particular post or a particular tweet. You know, one tweet goes viral. These accounts seem to have gone viral.
Yeah, in terms of accounts, I have not personally seen anything quite as powerful or that kind of growth immediately and basically overnight for many of these.
So what do we make of that?
What I think is really going on is that we have a sense of, I think as you've described earlier, there is frustration about gag orders like this. There is a sense that there is a disruption in the course of how our nation deals with especially science and how, again, truth and reality are something that is being fought over right now. And when we look at something like Twitter, which, again, viral phenomenon are something that happen regularly. I mean, that's what Twitter is built on. But for attention to be driven to so many different kinds of accounts, again, we're now looking at about 80, maybe even more, accounts that are doing about the same kind of work. When there's so much attention driven to those all at once, I think it certainly expresses concerns, and it expresses kind of a groundswell of feeling about this general sense of resistance.
Will Twitter users actually end up vetting some of these accounts based on, you know, what the content that is tweeted?
They may. And we have to keep in mind that Twitter, just because you follow somebody doesn't mean you agree with them either. And so just as we're seeing this groundswell of following, we're also seeing a lot of resistance and trolling to these accounts as well.
Sure. Well, I agree and disagree with some of these accounts. But if my BS detector goes off, whether I agree with it or not, I'm out of there. That's the way I am, at least.
Sure.
So I just wonder if Twitter users will say, I don't know if this is real. It doesn't matter whether I agree or disagree with it. I don't think that what they're providing here is accurate information or matters.
Right. And there's actually a very good example of that right now going on with the rogue staffer account in the Oval Office. And there's a lot of discussion.
There's a couple of those.
Right. And there's a lot of, you can see on the debate, if you ever look at the replies and the threads that form, you can see a lot of people really questioning and debating the legitimacy of the accounts. And I guess to answer your question is, yes, Twitter users do that pretty regularly. There is not a sense that there is just blind retweeting, you know, all the time. That followers are very active. And this is a space where there's a lot of negotiation and, you know, fighting over what is, in fact, true.
So a couple of the most disturbing, and we touched on this, to me, are Rogue POTUS, at Rogue POTUS staff, and at Angry WH staffer, White House staffer. What do you make of those accounts? Have you taken a look at those?
I've looked at the Rogue POTUS staffer. And again, what's hard to determine with that one is, again, who exactly is producing it. And again, there are so many theories that emerge, and this is what gets interesting. We start to fall into the land of conspiracy theory, because there are people who go in and do things like analyze all of the text and to say, this account may be coming from Russia because of a certain way that they abbreviate certain words, like I think vacation was one of them. They spelled it vacay, and Americans would use a V-A-C-A,
sure.
And somebody said, well, they used a V-A-K-A, and that's only something that happens with people from a particular language set, right?
It could also be a typo, too. I was just looking at a keyboard here to see if the C and the K were closely.
It could be a typo, right?
But they're not. But.
But there is that level. I mean, what that really speaks to me is that there's such a level of distrust where any information is coming from right now. And that could be a very legitimate leak of a source. And at the same time, it would be very easy to parody something like that.
There have been a lot of attempts, at least according to some of these sites, of people trying to figure out who they are. And what they do is they try to backdoor it by saying, I've forgotten my password. And then they can get
part of the phone number if a phone number has been associated with the Twitter account.
Right, and part of a phone number and part of an email address as well.
And then you can kind of put two and two together. That might be enough for someone in the West Wing to say, hey, you're out of here.
Right, that would be. And as well as any accidental mistakes, such as tagging a location, which would immediately indicate a space, or different kinds of shifts in terms of the device that that individual is using. And some of these rogue accounts that I've been following, I can go back through and see when they've been passed over to different hands. There'll be abrupt shifts in style as well as device that's being used.
Have you noticed that with rogue POTUS staff? Do you think it's not one person?
I need to look at them. Okay. I haven't done that kind of analysis.
What account have you seen?
I looked at Rogue NASA, which originally started all.
Some of these are not purporting to be one person. They're saying we are. They're using the word we, or there's we're a group of scientists or a group of national park rangers.
Right, exactly.
So you might end up seeing that. That wouldn't necessarily mean that the account is any less real or not.
Right, and it's, again, what we see are just shifts in practices where many of them begin as individuals, starting out to basically say, hey, I'm going to go rogue and post this information. And as they become part of a collective, they pass around the accounts or turn them over. And, that really does lead to one of the major issues is that, the reason many of these are on Twitter and not on a Facebook group, or although there are some of these that have turned into Facebook pages and organizations, but so many of them are on Twitter because of the anonymity that is afforded. There are lots of potential protections. It is much easier to be anonymous in a space like Twitter than it is on Facebook. And so for us to be able to backtrack and make sense of who all these people are takes considerable effort.
With rogue POTUS staff and angry WH staffer, there's these tweets about the infighting that's happening in the Oval Office. And those are disturbing. But I guess what I'm not seeing is anything that it all seems to be reaction. There's nothing here that is saying, hey, coming up tomorrow, President Trump's going to talk to the Australian Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. It's after the Australian Prime Minister, after the conversation with the Australian Prime Minister, you get reaction to that. But do you think it would be easier to believe that this person is actually in the West Wing if they were to tweet something that has not happened yet, but then does?
I think that would be a smoking gun, so to speak. And that would show more leak than, again, like you say, reaction. And again, if anybody has access to news and they can talk about something that has happened and place their own spin on that and make it seem like a narrative coming out of the White House, any one of us could do that. And so I think you're exactly right. That would be a good hint that somebody has privileged information that is being leaked.
I guess if this battle between Reince Priebus and Steve Bannon that has been tweeted about on some of these rogue accounts actually ends up blowing up, then that might be a smoking gun.
Exactly.
Twitter is ephemeral. You've alluded to this. The tweets in my feed move very quickly. I see them, then they're gone. You'd have to scroll way back to find a tweet. If you lose track of it, forget trying to find it. I've lost track of some that I've wanted to find. Mm-hmm. I can't find them. Some are now getting deleted as well. Talk to me about what it seems to be an uptick in people actually capturing these tweets as an image and then tweeting the image rather than actually retweeting the tweet.
Right. So in terms of that practice, there are, again, a couple of rationale for doing that. Number one, especially when something becomes contentious or if there is a misspelling or again, like we could say, a smoking gun here that we are certain will get removed, that is becoming common habit where we archive on our own. And again, the amazing part of digital devices is that we have that ability. There are other things that can happen, too. In our lab, a lot of the work that we do is using Twitter's public API to regularly capture tweets from certain kinds of accounts or searches. And so what we end up having is the full text, as well as the Twitter identification number, as well as other telling metadata and details. And that, to me, becomes a more significant record. That's something that can be verified with Twitter. Images can be doctored. And that's not to say that everything that is retweeted can be doctored or is untrue in that sense. There are people who can do things like write programs to make it look like a tweet. Photoshop is very easy to make something look like a tweet. And in fact, we've seen moments where people have gotten into fights over a tweet that looks like something they've produced when in fact it's Photoshop
right,
job.
Sure. Right. Is there anything with the SMAC technology that would give you any insight into who the actual people are?
We are limited.
Can I? I guess what I'm asking, can I use the SMAC lab for evil?
For evil. Most technologies could be used for evil. I mean, that argument can be made. But in terms of backtracking, the kind of API, and again, that's the ability for us to knock on Twitter's door and ask for data. What Twitter gives to us is limited, but it's much broader than what you see on Twitter. And so there'd be a couple of things that we'd be looking for. I think things like timestamps, locations, if they're available. And again, most people running these accounts are very aware that everything they're doing is being watched closely. And so they are not following into the trap of allowing location services and tagging a location or a space. And then also, again, we look for devices. And so any shifts in devices, and if that's connected with a geolocation, that can hint at what may be happening. And also content. This is something that everybody else can do as well. I mean, track changes in the kinds of messages that are being made and when they're being made in response or before certain news events, I think, just as you've alluded to.
What do you think the conversations are like in San Francisco at Twitter's headquarters about Trump's account and the rogue accounts? What do you asking you to sort of project yourself, be a fly on the wall. What do you think they're talking about?
Right. Well, Twitter is a private company, and I don't think when Jack Dorsey started out this kind of company, that he anticipated being as immensely political as it's become. And we really saw that with the Arab Spring, where it was used as a subversive tool and in many ways as an organizing tool and as well as a news tool.
Well, what's the difference between how Twitter's being used in Arab Spring and how it's being used today in the United States?
It's very similar. In fact, I think we're seeing the same kinds of upwellings. I think there are potentially different kinds of processes and in response to, obviously different situations.
I made you digress there. You were talking about Jack Dorsey.
Yep. Yeah, that's okay.
And what he didn't think that it would be this political.
Yeah, I don't think he thought it would be this political. It was really for the ability to share and to talk about your life and your interests and like a lot of social media.
What I had for lunch.
Right. Exactly. And what I really imagine happening right now at Twitter is they're this huge company. It's a privately held company. It is publicly owned at this point, but they are a private entity. That is doing an immense public service in a sense by allowing these mouthpieces to exist. And I think for them, there's so many questions about what do we allow because there are so many things that happen that are either harassment, that are death threats, threats of violence that they have to cut off. There's so much going on in the world of terrorism that they are being asked to be responsible for and to delete certain kinds of accounts. And I imagine that there are points where they look at this and they say, where are the lines in all these spaces? And I know they're getting questions from the government about where are these lines. And I think we're going to be seeing that emerge much more frequently as well.
So let me ask your opinion then, because you know more about Twitter than most of us listening. Is Twitter and how it's being used in the country today, is it a benefit to democracy or a threat to democracy?
Oh, goodness. That is a very difficult question to ask
that's why I'm here.
Yeah, and that's why I'm here too. with tools like this, I'm going to throw the easy answer out, which says, yes, it swings both ways. Mm-hmm. I think recently, especially this election cycle, we really saw how it became a threat with the ability to develop bots that rapidly retweet and inflate numbers of individuals purporting to have certain kinds of effects or their beliefs and using those inflated numbers to say, I'm bigger than I really am. We've seen moments where, again, just outright lies and misinformation is spread very rapidly. So those are incredibly dangerous. But at the same time, there is that level of resistance. I mean,
the rogue accounts right. almost seem like a check.
Right, exactly.
And
so,
a balance.
Right, and that's a really good way to phrase that. There are many checks and many balances. The problem, though, is that we are all becoming very cynical. So it may not be the problem with Twitter. It's certainly a problem with us right now, is that we are in a moment where being able to believe what we see is incredibly difficult, maybe even almost an impossible task.
Nate, thanks for your insight today on Sound Ideas.
Thank you for having me.
Nate Carpenter runs the Social Media Analytics Command Center at Illinois State University. The Smack Lab is tracking 44, maybe rogue accounts. This is Sound Ideas on GLT. You can follow the Smack Lab at ISUSOC_SMACC or Smack. You can also follow GLT at WGLT News. And I'm at Mike McCurdy.